Welcome to Alien Theorist Theorizing Case File 121. I'm Braden.
I'm Dan.
No Zell, no Andrew. But do we have an interview for all interviews? We have Mike Rothschild. The Rothschild. The Rothschild that you hear of in all conspiracies. The them, the they. Mr. Mike Rothschild.
Well, not exactly. The whole crux of the thing was I thought he was related to the Rothschild banking dynasty. Turns out he's just a really great conspiracy theorist. Just kidding, guys. Mike Rothschild is an author. He's got a book coming out next month called The World's Worst Conspiracies. So this is going to come out in January at some time. So it's already out. You'll get a chance to pick it up.
And all of you Zell and Andrew fangirls and fanboys, don't worry. They're on the interview as well. So you'll be able to hear their beautiful voices. They just didn't want to take the time out of their day to record some intros. Like dedicated Dan and myself.
It's a really great interview. I think everybody will really enjoy it. We talk about conspiracies, which everybody loves. And we get into a lot of the details surrounding. We get a taste of some actually really interesting sports conspiracies, which I hope we talk to Mike after the interview, after a great interview. He said he'd be willing to come back and talk to us about some fun sports conspiracies, which would be pretty neat.
The great thing about Mike that I really liked in this interview is he just really slid into the group. Like, I felt like he's a guy we could have been talking to for years. He just slid in really nicely into the conversation. And yeah, I think it's because he's also so knowledgeable about all the stuff he talks about.
Yeah, he's a real... you could call him an expert. I mean, he's a published author. He's done the research about these things. He really knows his stuff, and it was really fun to talk to him, and I'm glad we had him on the show.
Well, without further ado, I think we've pumped him up enough, so let's send it over to the interview with Mike Rothschild, whose book comes out January 2020, The World's Worst Conspiracies. Welcome to Alien Theorist Theorizing, Case File 121. I'm Braden.
I'm Zell.
I'm Dan.
I'm Andrew.
And tonight.
And I'm Mike.
We got. There's Mike.
I know who I am.
That's him.
Tonight, we'll introduce our very special guest, Mike Rothschild. Nice to have you on, Mike. Mike is a leading writer and researcher on conspiracy theories. Since we all love conspiracy theories here, we thought we'd bring him on. He's been cited on a number of publications, New York Times, Vice, The Week, Quartz, Salon, and plenty of other places I've seen his name pop up.
And now the most reputable, us.
Yes, 100%.
Most widely circulated alien theorizing podcast.
Congratulations, Mike. You made it.
So Mike's got a new book coming out next month, right? The beginning of the year. World's Worst Conspiracies. And worst in this context means?
It means the ones that have sort of done the most damage to the public discourse. I think a lot of conspiracy theories are fine for sort of idle chatter and what ifing, but I think there are some that really have done a considerable amount of collateral damage to the way we process information and deal with people. So those are among the worst, as it were.
Groovy. Right. Okay. Sounds good. I know I'm
Dan's good. Got so many questions. I know he's a team. What should we start with? Is there any conspiracies of modern times which you think are actually turned out to be true?
My thought with conspiracy theories has always been that no popularly believed sort of mainstream conspiracy theory has later turned out to not be a theory, but to be true. But that shouldn't be confused with the idea that conspiracies are not real, because of course conspiracies are real. There are conspiracies in every walk of life, in politics, in history, in sports, in business, and there have been for thousands of years. So while I don't look at the kind of classic conspiracy theories as being things that are actually true, let's not pretend that there aren't powerful forces who are conspiring against us, because there absolutely are. And we know that.
Yeah. Big business is a real, they got us. They got us no matter what.
So what brought you to the conspiracy? What fueled your passion to kind of go into the deep into the conspiracy world and kind of these things?
When I was in college, I got really into Art Bell. I kept weird hours. Like I was working late into the night a lot, and I was in theater, so I was doing a lot of late night rehearsals, and I'd come home and I'd be listening to something, and there wasn't anything else to listen to. And I got really into it. I got really into the stories that he told and sort of the worlds that he opened up and sort of the weird stuff that kind of square daytime society didn't really talk about. I didn't really believe any of it was true, but I thought it was such good storytelling and so compelling that I just kind of couldn't help but really get interested. So I started reading more books about the Illuminati and stuff like that. And that was a while ago. That was really before conspiracy theory culture went mainstream. And now, of course, it's everywhere. But that kind of diving into Art Bell was really kind of the beginning of that interest for me.
So when do you think, because you mentioned conspiracy culture going mainstream, what do you think there was a certain catalyst, or do you think there was a certain time like it became kind of, conspiracy culture has always been kind of like fringes. It's never been like, it's been out there. You watch your daytime sightings TV shows or your, Jonathan Frakes, alien, alien autopsies, right? When you catch it late at night in the middle of things. When do you think it became like almost a staple of like, oh, now it's everywhere. It's
everywhere. Yeah.
I think that started in the early to mid 90s, and you had a lot of factors kind of intersecting with each other. You had the X-Files, which brought conspiracy theories and the paranormal right into, millions of homes every week. You had Art Bell, who was really starting to find his footing as kind of a general conspiracy show, having moved away from a lot of the anti-government stuff. And you had the beginning of the internet. And you had these communities where people who maybe didn't know anybody else who thought the way they did could find each other. You had places like Usenet and BBSs where you could talk and it was completely safe. And you didn't have to go anywhere. It didn't cost you anything. There was no buy-in. Because before that, conspiracy culture really took effort. You had to go to a convention. You had to go to a gun show. You had to go to the weird bookstore or go see the guy on the corner in the surgical mask who's handing out, pamphlets about fluoride.
Hey, kids, you want to see a conspiracy?
But it was really in kind of the mid-90s that our communication tools started bringing people together. And we all thought we were going to have the Library of Alexandria on our computers and in our pockets. And instead it sort of turned into a magazine rack and a gun show.
Yeah. it's a very good point.
That's a real good analogy. Like you said, in your book, you mention conspiracies that have done damage to public discourse or at least some sort of deception or something like this. I'm trying to figure out, because I was trying to explain to my co-hosts about how conspiracy culture in the United States seems to differ from conspiracy culture in other countries. Like, I don't know if you've ever read the book Republic of Lies by Anna Merlin. Have you?
Okay. Actually, I've not. It's been on my list forever. And I just,
It's really good. It's really great. She does a really great job. And it really opens your eyes to how kind of unique the American conspiracy culture seems to be and where it's very polarizing. Whereas like, you go to Canada, you go to Australia, you go to these other countries. I mean, we have listeners from all over the world. And it still seems like conspiracy culture there is kind of fun. It's lighthearted.
Well, hey, listen, there's nothing funny about the great maple syrup heist of 94.
That's no laughing matter.
That was serious.
That's no laughing matter.
Serious here, boys. That was tragic.
Yeah, this is a real thing.
Yeah, that was a real conspiracy.
I think it's really interesting in terms of the foreign influence of conspiracy theories. In a lot of the 9/11 conspiracy theories really started in Europe. Okay. You had, a big 9/11 conspiracy population in France, Germany, the UK. So they sort of jumped on that bandwagon. I think, but while Americans were kind of still processing everything, it was people in other countries who've been through some things that Americans haven't who went, oh, wait a minute, that doesn't look right.
Right. Now, speaking of 9/11, because this is something that started me down the conspiracy rabbit hole, and I know we could probably spend a whole time on it, but just what's a quick summary of 9/11 to you? Like, is there a conspiracy, or is it all perpetrated through the internet?
I think that the need for 9/11 conspiracy theories is because the incident was so outside the realm of anything any American had ever experienced before.
Right.
You know, we're just not used to living in that kind of fear. And we're not used to the civilian population being a target that way. And I think we came up with conspiracy theories to explain what couldn't be explained. And I think when you kind of go backwards and start to break them apart into their component parts, they really don't make any sense. They're really logistically, they don't work.
I see. Like I've always thought 9/11 as, and no matter which way you think about it, the conspiracy was committed, just who organized the whole thing, right? And then it just went as a conspiracy minded person, like when I was younger, like, oh, 9/11, oh, it led to the invasion of all these countries. It all, like, it adds up quite nicely. But that's coming from someone who's never really done any of the research. But then you have people talk about the new American century, and those papers are written before 9/11, and it all seemed to fit piece by piece, and it all kind of seemed like it was a conspiracy orchestrated maybe by even the United States government itself. And that's what a lot of people think in conspiracy circles. So like, what do you say to all that, all the stuff that kind of like lines up to make it seem like a conspiracy?
I think a lot of things can be lined up if you want them to line up. I mean, yeah, there's things like Project for the New American Century and the, you know, we need a new Pearl Harbor and stuff like that. But that's such a blanket statement that it really could mean anything.
Right.
To me, the 9/11 conspiracy theories, what you're looking at is two different tracks. You've got either the government allowed it to happen, kind of knew it was going to happen, knew exactly what was going to happen and allowed it to happen, or actually made it happen and used these planes as part of some overarching plot.
Right.
And I think the second one, I think, is the one that can be dismissed a lot easier, the idea that the government actually did it. Because at that point, what you're talking about is buildings full of explosives. And were these explosives in these buildings for 40 years and just like no one found them? Were they in the, you know, the closet that everybody else thought they had the key for? You know, who paid for them? Who installed them? Who made sure they worked? I mean, it starts to involve so many people that at some point, probably very early on, someone's going to go, hey, some explosives. I don't know why, but you know, I'm telling my buddy at the bar.
It made it better.
And that's you can't keep that secret. There's no way.
It made it better because your Skype cut out. It made it better, that sound effect you were making.
Yeah, it did. It was perfect.
It made it a little bit more robotic.
It's for me, on my end, it sounded like a really thick New York accent. So I don't know if that's what you were going for.
Trying that. It really didn't really work.
Oh, it sounded good on my end. I had a good
job. Oh, well, then it worked.
Let's see. One of the like contemporary conspiracies that jumps to mind is we spent a little bit of time on it, but we got kind of lost in the reeds, which is probably understating it, but is QAnon. Like,
what
QAnon's
is it?
QAnon's been in the news, and I know just recently, I think like Mike Flynn and at least one other person kind of stepped out. Like, they said they were going to speak at a QAnon convention, and then they canceled it. He said, no, I'm not going to do that. Oh, and he's also going to jail. But like, you know, so like what is you've done the research and what is QAnon? Can you give us like a little, if you were going to tell somebody like, what is QAnon?
We got lost. We got lost.
Like, we have absolutely no idea what the fuck QAnon
because
is.
Because Andrew has no idea.
Break it down for us. Baby steps here.
That really nobody should know what QAnon is. the kind of the elevator speech version of QAnon is that there is a government insider who is in military intelligence and is privy to upcoming purge of the deep state. So Democrats, pedophiles, Hollywood executives, business people, anybody the Clintons know, they're all going to get rounded by the deep state and either sent off to Guantanamo Bay or tried in the field and executed without due process. So what QAnon is doing is leaving clues to this upcoming purge on, it was 8chan, now it's 8kun. And these clues are very cryptic. They're riddles, they're rhetorical questions, they're memes, they're discussion prompts, they're like little terse phrases that if you know what they mean, then they're really meaningful. And if you don't know what they mean, they're just gibberish. And it's all done in this very secret, very coded language. It's supposed to be the biggest military intelligence operation of all time, but it's also sort of letting the patriots know about it so that they're prepared for when the roundups start. So that's basically what QAnon is. It's an information awareness military operation that has no information to be aware of.
Now, what do they call it? What's the term for it? Like the Great Awakening or?
The Great Awakening. Yeah, you'll see that. You'll see the storm.
Storm, you're right.
Those terms are kind of interchangeable.
And the storm is when the deep state is overthrown and all the people who are along with it are cast out. And according to some people on the dark pages of internet calling for like violent revolution and killing of other ideologies that don't align with their own. In easy terms.
Yeah, you get a lot of really violent ideation. I get sent memes of like nooses and guillotines, and I'm constantly told your time is coming, TikTok.
Jesus.
And it's all, you see these fantasies about like what's going to happen on the day of the storm, and Hillary's going to be arrested and there's going to be riots and I'm going to grab my gun and start shooting the looters and we're going to protect the president and we're going to take our country back and we're going to string up the traitors. I mean, it's kind of, I liken it to a Tom Clancy novel meets the Turner Diaries, where you have just this sort of technological gobbledygook and that just leads to killing.
How do you think this gains so much traction and becomes so popular? Because it was one of the more polarizing topics we've done. But like, I mean, as soon as we started looking into it, same thing. I was looking at the drops and I was like, I don't understand how this has so much traction because none of this makes any sense. It is just all exactly like you said, gibberish.
Gobbledygook.
So how do you think it's gained so much popularity?
The reason why I think QAnon has taken off, it's a couple things. QAnon is very participatory. A lot of the really apocalyptic conspiracy theories of the past, whether you had the UN troops crossing the border or before that, the Catholics, before that, the Freemasons, it's all kind of these horrible things are happening and there's nothing, you're just a on in their game, and if they want to kill you, they'll kill you. And if they want to, QAnon is very participatory. It lets you fight back. It gives you tools in making memes and doing research and turning other people onto it. And it lets you feel like you're fighting the battle game. And it's not just other people. It's not just sort of the brave prayer warriors. You're doing it. You're in the trenches with the memes and the digging and the making connections. And that's really compelling for people.
Right.
Another thing about Q is that it kind of explains who your enemies are. And it explains why things didn't turn out the way that we wanted them to. So it gives you the deep state as an enemy, and it gives you George Soros as the enemy, and it gives you the Clintons and Barack Obama and John McCain and Mitt Romney and all of these people who are not sufficiently patriotic. And it gives you enemies, and it tells you these people kept you down. These people are hurting other people. These people especially are hurting children. They are awful and they must be stopped. And this is how you stop them. And that that lets people feel like they're part of a bigger war, and you get a lot of good and evil and angels and demons and like Satan and God winning in the end. And it's very like Revelations. And then it's like, it's kind of like being in a big battle royal for the end of the world.
Well put.
Royal Rumble. Next year, 2020.
The storm. Now, hasn't the storm been, some people say the storm is supposed to come like a couple times by now and nothing.
Every prophetic movement has
multiple.
The day it's going to happen. And then for some reason that just never, there's always some reason, something didn't happen to align perfectly the way it needed to, but it's going to happen soon. It's going to be next week. It's going to be next month. You know, don't give up hope. Don't lose hope. Buy more of our merchandise. Tell more people. Buy more books. You know, it's a very easy way to keep people on the hook. And we've seen that for centuries. I mean, we saw that with the Millerites. We've seen that with UFO cults. I mean, there's always a reason why something doesn't happen. And there's always someone to blame for it not happening.
Right. Now, one more question I had about Q, because this is something that comes up, and obviously you get a lot of heat for calling it. Some people call Q plus, and they think it's actually like POTUS himself.
Right.
So what do you think about that?
I think that Donald Trump, from everything we know about him, is almost completely computer illiterate. he's talked about how he doesn't know how to use email.
Just Twitter.
He's never owned a laptop. He's got his unsecured phone that he tweets on. God knows what else he's got on it. But the idea that Donald Trump, who is like the most tech averse notable person that I know of, would be logging onto 8chan and like posting memes and codes to people. Like, Donald Trump doesn't talk in codes.
Dude, it's one of those things where as soon as you say it out loud, it's like it becomes so much comical.
No, he's Q plus. Like, really?
Yeah.
The guy who can't spell hamburgers on Twitter is like dropping clues on 8chan. Like, really?
Now, another thing people say about it is that maybe Trump, because he used conspiracy culture probably to gain momentum to get elected.
Yes.
Do you think that he heard maybe about Q and he's like, yeah, give the guys let's poke a couple of things online just to, you know, keep feeding it?
I don't know. That's a really good question. He's never given any indication that he knows what it is. He's never mentioned it. He's never, he's never spoken about it. He's never tweeted about it. He's retweeted a lot of people with Q hashtags and Q iconography in their profiles, but that could just as easily be about what they're tweeting and he just likes it.
Right.
And he doesn't, you know, he doesn't know what a hashtag wiggy wuggy. He doesn't know what that is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the idea that he's like circling his hand in the air and poking it through to make a Q, and he's like pointing at Q signs. He points. He goes to rallies and he like does his, you know, and he points and it's just what he does. And if you game out how he communicates, it's really easy to imitate it. And it's really easy to predict what he's going to do, because he only does and says a certain number of things. He's done pluses in his tweets before. He's capitalized weird letter, you know, weird words before. And he tweets a lot and Q posts a lot. And so if Q posts and Trump tweets a minute later, that only means the two things that happen a lot happen at the same time. There's no significance to it. So, you know, unless he brings it up and specifically mentions it, then I think it's going to be a whole different kettle of fish. But for now, he just communicates the way he does and people read into it.
Yeah, well put. That's when we first talked about it, that's kind of how we thought about it too. We're like, I don't understand. It doesn't make sense really. We ended up getting grilled. That's probably the hardest we've ever got grilled after a podcast. We're like, we just don't know. Sorry.
Yeah. And people get really touchy about it.
Yeah. People are, I don't know. It's part of our culture now. The kind of the trigger culture, whatever you want to kind of call it, is like everybody's so sensitive, or they accuse you of being sensitive when you start to either you start to ask questions about something, and then they get offended, and then they're like, well, I was just asking questions, and there's always that kind of thing. Well, you need to do the research for yourself, or you need to look it up for yourself. And it's like, okay, if I do that, then even I do that, you start investing time. I think that works with, you know, some people. They kind of get into it, and it works with some people. Once you start putting in the time, again, like you said, it's participatory. It rewards you in some way with, you get these little, like they said, the breadcrumbs, like you follow the breadcrumbs and then you become a baker or whatever. And when we talked about it, I likened it to, like, your bakers are like your high priests. You know, it's almost like a religion, you know, even though some of these people are kind of religion averse, or they're averse to organized religion, which for me doesn't like play together. It doesn't like, okay. All
right.
So,
right. And there's a real aspect. There's a pyramid scheme hierarchy, Q, or I guess maybe Trump at the very top, and then Q under that. And then under that, you've got this ecosystem of gurus, you know, these people who tweet these really long Twitter threads and who make the YouTube videos every day and have hundreds of thousands of followers, the people who write the books, the people who, you know, interpret the drops and have kind of made, you know, almost careers out of it. And then below that is just sort of everybody else, all of the kind of the rank and file believers who just, you know, who can't interpret it or just don't have the time or whatever. And they depend on the gurus to kind of transform this rhetorical nonsense into a story. And it's just fascinating how this is developed this way, very organically. I mean, I don't think the people who started making the Q posts had any idea that this would be more than like a couple weeks worth of trolling, basically.
Yeah, because it's been going on pretty much since the last election. That's when it kind of started.
Yeah, it started October 2017. So over 2 years.
It's great. It sounds like a religion almost.
Totally.
Yeah, definitely.
It's totally like a religion.
Faith-based.
Yeah. Wild.
Just as fucking crazy.
Well, that's why people get so hooked in, because as soon as they do the research and they're like, ooh, maybe this is kind of bullshit, they're like, well, I've been posting about it for so long now, I can't backtrack now. Just like Scientology. As soon as you find about Zeno, you put in all that money, you're like,
I'm locked in.
Yeah. That's why they don't start with Zeno. I mean, yeah. they start with, like, you know, stress tests and free movies, and the Xenu.
Wait, Scientologists get free movies? I'm down.
You get free, down. Free Amazon down. Prime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, hey. Nobody, you know, got to get your e-meter from somewhere.
Yeah. So it's, I would say, like, these kinds of conspiracies, like anti-government conspiracies, aren't something new, but this one seems to kind of, again, it plays on the deep state, which has been around forever, like, or not forever, maybe like the 90s, like late 80s, maybe.
Yeah. Well, there's always been a deep state. You know, there's always been a sort of tyrannical, you know, fringe government within a government. I mean, if you want to call it the New World Order, you want to call it the military industrial complex. I mean, there's always been a name for
really rich people
kind of. Yeah. There's always been that kind of evil, tyrannical government that's taken away all our rights and we just don't know it. But QAnon is interesting because it's not anti-government. It's like, it's almost anti-anti-government. I mean, it's put the onus on the people who the right wing used to really fear. You know, you had this idea that the jackboots were going to kick your door down and take your guns away and you got to aim for the head. And now it's like Q is like rooting for the jackboots. It's really weird. It's a really bizarre reversal.
That's interesting.
And yeah, it's some, from what I've read about it and the people who really get into it, and I've seen posts a lot about the Q stuff, it's scary. Like, most of it's like, it's genuinely terrifying to me because I'm an educator. So it's like, we've learned a lot about, you know, how to teach kids and like how to interact with them and how to, you know, emotional development and those kinds of things. So it's like, all of this stuff is like, it's almost kind of juvenile. Like it's like you guys are like, this is not the way to do things. Like it's not, it's all very violent, every like smash and grab. And then to me, like when I think about it and I'm going to, if I'm going to, you know, put forward the idea of a revolution, I'm like, okay, well then how are we going to get the water running again? Like, how are we going to, like, how are we going to get everybody electricity? You know, and the like, there's a lot of problems I have with QAnon, but the biggest one is like, you know, hurting all these people. And then it's like, okay, if you do that, then it's like, what about infrastructure? Like, how is this going to solve problems and not just, you're going to end up with a bunch of dead people?
Yeah. It's like, it's, I, the whole thing is so, it's so, interconnected and highly sensitive. Just a few days off of like the energy grid running, like the whole society like collapses pretty much.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like you don't got more than like in most major cities, like 2 days worth of food for the, like all the residents. And like after the food's gone, like it'd be nuts real quick.
As long as they have their guns and Jesus, they're fine.
The Lord's coming.
Yeah. They got Jesus. They're fine.
And, are there, and there's another kind of hallmark that I've seen of like other kind of conspiracy and stuff, like, well, not, I would say like, you know, bad conspiracies, is they're very fractious. Like there's almost factions within factions inside because you're, all of this is, seems to be based on interpretation, you know? So again, even like you have major world religions like Christianity, it's not just Christianity, you have the Catholics, you have the Lutherans, you have all this. I've seen some, because there's some people who say that, you know, QAnon is not violent. It's not a violent movement. It's the where we go one, we go all. It's all, everybody's in it together, you know, that kind of stuff, which seems positive. Like, you know, like we're all getting this together. Like, okay, yeah, I understand that. Like, yeah, we are. But then, you know, then the other stuff, and then it gets kind of dark kind of quick in some places. But, you know, but are there different like compartments of Q? Like, are there, have you, from your research, have you seen like different points of view of it, or what do you think?
You definitely, you don't, it's funny, you don't get a lot of arguing over what the drops mean, once, because it's sort of like once the gurus kind of start the research flowing, everybody kind of wants to jump in and nobody wants to be wrong. You get a lot of squabbling, a surprise, over money. You get a lot of, you get some people who think that the movement needs to be so pure that no one ever profits off it, that it must only be about the research and only waking up the normies and preparing the way for the great awakening. And then you have people who just milk it like it's a cash cow.
Right.
And there's a lot of kind of slap fighting about the purity versus the patriots, the PAY triots. And so you get a lot of kind of squabbling over that. You get some of the personalities that kind of rub up against each other a little bit. And there's a lot of like, you know, I'm purer than you, you're purer than me. But once you kind of drill even a little bit below that, ideologically, everybody's in lockstep. You know, you don't get cults where there's disagreements about doctrine. Maybe there's right. disagreements about, you know, who gets to sleep with the leader that night, but the leader is always right.
Who's drinking the Kool-Aid first?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So that's, like you mentioned, personalities rubbing up against each other. I think that's one of the thing. I think most of us, we all watched a documentary, Behind the Curve, Flat Earth. Oh,
good. Oh, that's great.
So good.
Good one.
Yeah.
It was a great documentary, and you see within there, there's even fractions between, you know, their things. You have the guys who are really down into it, who are like flat earth is perpetrated by the New World Order or whoever, you know.
Yeah, the ones who think gravity doesn't exist.
Right.
And then you have the other ones who are just kind of like, no, the earth is flat and just science is wrong, or, you know, they're just doing the science wrong or something like that. You know, it's kind of how they kind of have their ideological difference. But I guess, like you said, QAnon's more like, I guess they're more all on the same page, seems.
Yeah, you know? It's very cult-like. It's very, and I sort of think of it as a prophecy cult with a really scammy edge to it. So it's a lot of really terrible things all put together.
It's the perfect storm.
It is. Oh, it is. I mean, pun intended, but it really is sort of a conspiracy theory of everything, because anything that happens anywhere in the world can be interpreted as part of this war.
Right.
So you get, you know, a military helicopter crashes in Louisiana. Well, that's the deep state at work. They need a distraction. or, you know, that, or, you know, somebody, you know, Michael Flynn gets arrested. Well, that's the deep state fighting back, or John McCain dies. Oh, with Q team got him. I mean, it's always, there's another battle. There's always something going on somewhere. And that's why it's so interesting, because it's like this, it's like a sort of life-size game of Risk that everybody gets to play.
It's well put.
Now, in your research and stuff, is this kind of attitude and belief, is it similar to like the flat earthers?
You know, with flat earth is a little different, because I can never quite tell who in flat earth really, I've spent a lot of time in flat earth Facebook groups, and you kind of get the sense that like half the people there are just trolling. But then the ones, like you were saying, the ones who really believe it are like, they will brook no defection from the dogma. And I think with something like QAnon, you get the same thing. It's like, you are either with us or you are going to go to Gitmo. But if you're with us, then you will share in the riches of paradise. And so it becomes, if you listen to that over and over again, you're like, well, I don't want to go to Gitmo. I don't want my people that I loved to be hauled away and shot in the field. I'm going to help them. I'm going to tell them what's really happening. And then your family goes, okay, you're not coming to Thanksgiving ever again. Yeah.
Have you heard the good news?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, it's this kind of, I'm worried about it. Like we laugh about it. Like I laugh nervously about it, because from an American point of view, it's like, it's really scary. Like for me, I don't know. Like it's that anybody could kind of be part of this, and that these people really think this way. And even if they're not going to necessarily, there's, you know, you'd really actually in these times, it's really uncertain who's going to act on these, you know, these kind of how many people do they get together in one spot and this will, you know, this will happen, or people really think about this. Cause there have been, you know, there's been at least a couple protests where it seems, you know, there's a powder keg there. There's something there that could potentially go off. And like, I want to say like conspiracies are scary, but sometimes, but they shouldn't be, you know, they've always been, for me, like when I was kind of getting into all this stuff, and when I was a kid reading about Illuminati, secret societies and stuff like that, that stuff's genuinely interesting. I enjoy reading the histories
mysteries.
Yeah, histories, mysteries. Like that stuff's
fun. There's a reason why this stuff has stuck around. It's interesting. It can be fun. It can be sort of weird and you know, you talk about it with your friends, and you know, you read weird books about it, and a lot of it is okay. There's really nothing wrong with it. Everybody believes something weird, and that's fine. But when you get to this point of like making plans for what happens when the Democratic Party is arrested by Q plus, and you get to grab your gun and it's legal to commit murder, I mean, then it gets weird. And people get so into it, and they want to bring it to the people that they love, because they think they're helping. And the people that they love have no idea what they're talking about and think it's terrifying. And people get cut out of each other's lives because of it. Relationships end because of it. You know, parents and children aren't speaking because of it. And there's an enormous amount of collateral damage to it, not to mention the crimes that have been committed because of it.
Right. Yeah, I've always thought of like conspiracies as, if nothing else, as you said, fun to talk about with your friends, but also giving like rise to countless fiction works about something where the conspiracy is derived from. So like JFK has spawned how many different books and movies of fiction?
Oh, hundreds. Yeah.
And like, just like in like aliens, like now you got like, okay, the alien conspiracy, the government's hiding them. So mm-hmm. You got 1,000 movies, and that's like, you know how much that like that's creates whole economies based on conspiracies that are turned into story.
Sure.
Who are then worked upon, and then another story's brought out of them. So that's kind of how we all started with conspiracies. I think like, oh, it's, you know, you talk about with your buddies over a few beers, then we started this podcast. But then as you get to some of them, they do take a dark turn, as Dana has pointed out. And like in Canada, like there's three of us from Canada, Dan's from the States. In Canada, there's no real government conspiracies because it's lame as hell. Like the government conspiracies here are like, that guy didn't pay back his travel like his, he took too much in his travel, on, he claimed too much on travel. So he,
vouchers and like,
yeah. And then
like
reports. 5 years later, they're like, oh, he's got to pay back $137,000. And then he goes, I'm sorry. And then he pays it back. And like, that's not fun at all. No one,
no, there's,
it's not fun at all. It's a shit conspiracy. That. Nothing happens.
Yeah. That's, I'm bored with that.
So when we watch, like you watch all like American TV, is this in, like American news, especially, is this insane? So you watch it and it's like the greatest reality show. You're like, what the fuck is happening here? You turn on one channel, they're talking about something one way. You change one channel, the same supposed to be professional, like journalists and like news anchors are talking about the same story in a completely different way. You're like, what the fuck is going on here? And just that, just like the duality of the media was spawns its own conspiracy theories because no one knows who's right.
Right. And no one, and everybody has their own version of the truth. And if you watch Fox News, you are getting not just different opinions, not just different interpretations. You are literally getting a different set of events.
Yeah, different story.
Than if you watch CNN. And the people who watch Fox News, they get, not everybody, but a lot of them, they only watch Fox News. They only listen to right-wing talk radio. They're only reading right-wing news sources and follow right-wing accounts on Twitter and Facebook. And so nothing gets in, and it is a bubble where all the air is bad, and there's no light, and it's just full of danger, and it's like addicting to people because there's always a new enemy, and there's always a lie that's being exposed, and there's always something new that the Clintons or Obamas or the socialists have done, and it's like it's a constant hate machine, and it really sucks people in, and it's really hard to get out.
It's crazy. Yeah. I want to ask, like, now you said all that, and like everyone knows, everyone watches these channels, and like if, as you said, like they follow their point of view depending on what source. Is there anything like on the horizon, like going back to like as unbiased news reporting as possible, just telling you the story regardless of side, just telling you the facts, and then letting people make their own minds up? Is that ever coming back, or is that something that's gone?
I think you have to really work for it. I find generally a lot of the BBC is really good. I find the NPR is really good. You know, sometimes the New York Times, but then the New York Times also makes really big mistakes. You know, everybody has to curate their own news feed. You have to keep the bad stuff and trying to get good stuff from as unbiased a source as possible. And it's really hard. It's very difficult to know who is telling the truth. And that's why fake news is so popular. I mean, not like the Trump definition of fake news being like stories I don't agree with, but like actual fake stories.
Right.
Shared because they just sound real. People believe what's on the internet. People believe something that someone else wrote, because a lot of people still think of the internet and of just sort of journalism in general is just always telling the truth.
I think we've actually touched on it like once or twice. I've mentioned it, but we haven't gone full into it because it's a big issue. But like the whole, I guess if you could call it a conspiracy, like the Russian disinformation campaign, like what do you think like that? I know there's been documented cases of Russian backed, you know, firms and, you know, companies that have interfered with a number of U.S. elections, not just, you know, what they came to the conclusion in the reports on the 2016 election, but also local elections. I think Ohio just had one. And maybe North Carolina. I can't remember if it was North Carolina or South Carolina, somewhere in one of those ones. But we were talking about the Internet Research Agency. That kind of, have you heard of that before?
Yes, I have.
And we were kind of wondering, like, from what I've read so far, like, or been updated, it's like they've now dissolved and they've been absorbed by kind of one of the, one of the Russian state news companies.
Oh, like, I actually didn't know that, but that wouldn't surprise me. I mean, it's like an LLC. I mean, it's a shell company of a shell company. I mean, it doesn't exist, basically.
So like from your research, do you feel like that kind of has legs? Like the Russians are actually interfering or, you know, propagating a lot of fake news sites and things like that. And, you know, going do you think they post just on right wing, or do they post on left wing as well? Do they sow discord? Like, what do you think, in your opinion?
I think with a disinformation campaign like this, you always want to hit it from every possible side. So yeah, they're posting right wing anti-Clinton stuff, but they're posting left wing anti-Trump stuff. What they want to do is get people overwhelmed and frustrated and make them disengage from the process. So I don't know that there is a targeted campaign on behalf of Trump right now, but I think what they want to do is just get people to stop tuning in and frustrate people and make people feel hopeless. And ultimately, you know, I've never believed that there was any actual changing of voter rolls or anything like that. I mean, I think that's just too hard to do. But, you know, the Russian trolling that we saw brought up after the election, with these Facebook groups and these, like, where people would show up. I mean, it was like, it really was a negligible impact. But then the DNC really wasn't. I mean, that was a hugely important part of it. And we know they did that. And we know that was hardcore intelligence. I mean, that was like really top tier hackers. That wasn't just memes. So I think the Russians are all over the place in everything. But I think it's too easy to just blame everything on Russia. You know, I think ultimately this stuff works because people are susceptible to it.
Right.
And our critical thinking skills are so damaged. I mean, nobody should have been sucked in by this stuff. These stupid memes and these Facebook groups, this was just cut rate garbage, and it never should have worked. And it did, because people don't know how to think anymore. And we were so polarized by Team Red, Team Blue, that we just abandoned all sense.
That's a good point.
At least that, because I know I see it, and it makes me sad generally when I talk to some people like who are in like the same kind of into the same kind of things that I am in the conspiracy culture, and they feel that helplessness where it's like, it either gets translated into stuff like QAnon, where it's like they get into that, they post the memes, they post all that stuff. I'm doing my part. Or it gets translated into that, well, you know, I'm not going to vote because my vote doesn't matter anyway. It's like, I'm not going to do anything about it, which I always feel like, no,
don't do it.
You still should vote. Like, it's still going to count, especially now more than ever. Like,
and that's what they want.
Right. That's what I thought. That's what they want. I could say that's a conspiracy, is that that's what they want, is they want you not to vote. They want you to be isolated from the democratic process. They want you isolated and to feel that helplessness so they can just run all over you.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. Is that they want the enemy demoralized. And unfortunately, a lot of this process really is demoralizing. It's very chaotic. It's almost suffocating. And it's almost too much. And the way that they work is they really flood the zone with all this crap. And some of it isn't going to do anything, but some of it is going to hit some people. And if it gets a few people to not vote or to turn off in the process, it weakens democracy. And that's that's the ultimate goal.
Yeah. I mean, really? We've, you know, in most of my, most of my courses about education, like at least one of my professors made a point to talk to us that the ultimate goal of what, you know, US education was supposed to be was, you know, when they ask you like, what's your goal as a teacher? It should be to educate your students so they can be active participants in their democratic government. Like, so they can make their decisions, they can make informed decisions about the direction that their government is going, and a positive direction, hopefully, you know, the more moralistic direction, that they're able to participate in that and make their own decisions. And like you said, yeah, critical thinking is way down. I mean, I know I've seen at least a couple studies that we're way behind other countries that you know, that take the same kind of tests. Like, our critical thinking skills are just like out the window. Like, and it's some, like, at least, you know, some students, whether it's a disenfranchisement with the system, or, you know, kids are less likely to engage. And there is that, like, that is, that could be another conspiracy about the education, like the gutting of the education system, and the, you know, the sowing of doubt in our court, in our justice system, you know, routing the IRS so they can't enforce tax laws and, you know, super rich people, those kinds of things. You know, all those things kind of add up. And it's like, it's, I feel like that's led us to where we are now, that you feel all this helpless, but we shouldn't. I still feel like we still have power. There's still things we can do.
Absolutely.
Well, I was just going to say the same thing where Dan, you said like teachers, their main goal should be that. I can't remember what it was, but I remember seeing like I think it might've been like an Australian like broadcasting company thing where they like, we're asking like politicians in the States and politicians in Australia, like what their main goal is. And all the ones in Australia were like, oh, to work for the people, to get the best outcome for my community or whatever it was. And all the ones in the States, or at least the ones that they showed, were like, it was more of a financial compensation rather than like for the people. I always thought like, that's probably partly right. Accurate.
Well, I even like going back to the like Russian bots and all that kind of stuff. I definitely think we're seeing an unprecedented level of like the internet still, as much as we think it's very controlled, it's still the Wild West. And I wouldn't be surprised if years down the road, we find out that there was mass psychological experiments going on by manipulating social media and what people see. I mean, some of that's come out already. There was a great documentary, about the last election and the use of memes.
Was it the Great Hack or the Big Hack or something?
Yeah, the Great Hack.
Yeah, about Facebook or what's that one company they did?
Cambridge Analytica.
Yeah,
it was them and one.
No, Cambridge Analytica. Like they actually showed, like they showed Ted Cruz as their kind of proof of concept.
Totally lost you guys.
You're back.
Hey, we still got we got your audio. Just your picture's gone, so no big deal. Can we get him back? Can we get Mike back?
Well, I'll use this time. If you've enjoyed listening to Mike, get on our Patreon, $10 a month, because his new book is going to be featured for the February meat draw. So not the January, but the February meat draw is going to include his book.
Reason is, his book doesn't come out till January. So
yes. I've got it on pre-order, but I won't get it till February. So February meat draw.
Hey.
Oh, hey. Hey,
we got him.
We got Mike, but no Braden.
That's all right. Cool.
Yeah, our co-host just decided to go take a quick shit or something while you
disappeared.
That's so good. We're at 56 minutes, so maybe we'll do a couple rapid fire questions for you, then we'll let you go. The internet seems to be working out.
Sure.
Thoughts on JFK? What happened?
You know, the JFK thing, I've always felt like the story that we have is the one that makes the most sense. You know, to me, if you go through all of the books that have been written and all of the theories that have been put out there, there's some number that if, you know, all the books put together, there's like 80 different people who killed him. To me, it's always been very simple. Kennedy was riding in a defenseless car, going very slowly. And Lee Harvey Oswald had a clear shot and was a trained sniper. You know, and even then he only really hit him once. So, you know, I don't think you really need anything else. I don't think you need a conspiracy to explain it. I think it's people want a conspiracy to explain it because, you know, it's John F. Kennedy and you know, you want John F. Kennedy to be taken down by somebody other than this drifter loser. But ultimately, that's kind of what we have. It's still the theory that makes the most sense.
What about like, because Oswald was in Russia and some people make the claim that, oh, he was brainwashed or whatever. And they allowed him back in and they through whatever mind control or whatever, they made him do it, whoever the they would be.
Right. But that's the thing is who's the they? Ultimately, why? You know, it's not like Lyndon Johnson did anything differently than Kennedy would have done. I mean, maybe Kennedy wouldn't have gotten us as involved in Vietnam, but maybe he would have. I mean, ultimately, it's just so much easier to think of a very disturbed person who really thought he was striking a blow for freedom in Cuba, killing Kennedy, than some conspiracy where 55 years later, we still really don't know who did it or why or have any real paper trail for it.
And pretty much until everyone who was around, if there was a conspiracy, if something was covered up, it's not coming out until everyone involved is probably gone.
Oh yeah, it would be like the year 2200 by the time those documents are
Remember that really
declassified.
That famous president from 200 years ago? Yeah, he was actually murdered by whoever for whatever means. Moving on. Thoughts on the modern UFO culture?
It's interesting. UFO culture is really, it's kind of in a fallow period, it feels like. You don't get the, there's not the same buzz over like sightings and abductions and cattle mutilations and crop circles and stuff like that. It's almost like that culture kind of moved on to something else. And a lot of it is also because a lot of stuff has been declassified now. You know, we really know what Area 51 was about. We know a lot of those programs now. And I think also everybody's got a camera in their pocket. So if whereas once you would have told a story about being abducted, it's like, well, you've got a camera in your pocket. Why didn't you take any pictures? Why didn't you get any video? And it's become harder to kind of tell those stories in a vacuum.
What about like the, I don't know if you watched or listened to Commander David Fravor tell his story about the UFO on Joe Rogan to millions of people?
Mm-mm, no.
Anyway, he was the one, it wasn't the Tic Tac. There was those three videos released through
the gimbal.
It was the gimbal, but.
The gimbal. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think about those modern UFO military videos?
You know, I know with that one, I think that was just a heat source as far as I know. And it kind of, and I'm not an expert on this stuff, but if you sort of track the way it moved, it completely tracks with whatever the heat source would have been emanating from. I don't think the it's aliens explanation is necessary to be able to understand or explain what's going on.
So I tend to agree with that actually for sure. But like Commander David Fravor, he said it was a military operation and this thing actively jammed radar, which is like, I guess in his terms, I don't know if this is true or not, kind of an act of war to like actively jam whatever. Like
or maybe the radar just wasn't working. One of the things that's going around the conspiracy community is a lot is you've had a lot of military plane crashes in the last few years. And, people look at it as like the deep state or the good guys and the bad guys and they're crashing planes and it's a sign. But at the same time, you have a lot of like 40 and 50 year old airplanes that are, they're working well past their capability and have been in combat for like 20 years. If you look at Afghanistan and of course we've had the, military budgets cut here.
God damn. You're so logical. I hate it.
No, but at the same time though, I recommend you listen to David Fravor, give his account because he actually, he's a pilot and it wasn't an old aircraft. I can't remember what the model was, but it was a new aircraft. And he goes through all the things what people said, like, oh, it's a heat source thing. It's blah, blah, blah. And he explained why it wasn't all that stuff. But I didn't understand any of it. But it was really, really interesting.
Yeah.
So it's check it out. It's a cool, like, it's those type of videos and those type of accounts by, like, pilots are like, I'm not saying it's alien, but someone or something had tech that we didn't understand. So I don't know if it was, like, some other, like, advanced aircraft. Russia's got their own Area 51. They're developing their own type of modern SR-71 that's like beyond our capabilities right now. As far as aliens go and like that kind of stuff, sometimes it makes more sense. But like maybe someone just has a craft that we do not know how it works yet, or we haven't seen it.
Yeah,
in action.
Or there's just some classified project.
Yeah,
there's plenty of classified projects. There was that automated space shuttle that was up in orbit for like 3 years and finally came down and people are like, we have no idea what it is.
That drone.
X-35-7. It's like X-35-7B or something.
X-37B.
Yeah, the second one.
X-37B was up for like 550 days in space. No one really knows why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That stuff's cool.
So that's cool. It's fun to talk about.
Fun, 100%.
So at the beginning of the podcast, you mentioned something about sports conspiracies. So I'm just curious, what's your favorite sports conspiracy and are the Detroit Lions cursed?
My favorite sports conspiracy, because I grew up in Chicago, has always been the Michael Jordan retirement conspiracy.
Oh, with the gambling?
Yeah, with the gambling, that he got forced out, and he retired and played baseball for a year because there was a handshake deal with him and David Stern. And I've always loved that conspiracy theory. I've always been a big fan of the Patrick Ewing, the frozen envelope one too.
Well, tell us about that.
Never heard that one.
Oh yeah, that's I think it was 1985 when Ewing was drafted by the Knicks. The conspiracy is that the envelope for the Knicks in the draft lottery was frozen, so that David Stern, or I can't remember who it was, would have picked that envelope so that Knicks, you know, the franchise team in the biggest city in the country, would get the best player.
Oh, crazy.
Have they been cursed ever since? Because they've been god awful.
Yeah, don't mess around with the envelope.
No,
yeah.
Shit.
Any other questions for Mike? Or it's been an hour. We said to let him go, and we'll.
Oh, it's okay.
Braden, lost Braden now.
Oh, sorry, you guys cut up there for a second.
Goddamn Skype, eh? You can't so, beat it. You can't so beat good. The Skype.
No, Monopoly.
Any other questions here in YouTube? Someone just said we're not going down that aisle.
Which one?
Pizzagate. We're not going to Pizzagate.
Oh God!
The diddlers.
No more diddler talk.
Oh, thank you,
Mike. Tell us about your book. Where people can find you? Your book's coming out in January, I believe, right?
Yeah, next month.
Next month.
You can pre-order it on Amazon. I've got a link to that on my Twitter account. I'm a pretty active tweeter. I actually really love the hell site that has ruined so many lives. yeah, you can find me on Twitter, RothschildMD. I'm not a doctor. It's just my initials.
Are you a banker by any chance?
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
No, not related to the family.
Oh, okay. Just checking. Who's bankrolling this
here?
Book?
Dan told us you were loaded.
Yeah, that you was said you're a trillionaire.
I told him that you were related. That's the only way I got you on here.
So you're going to donate at least $1 million to the show.
Right. Yeah, no, if I tell people this all the time. If I, you know, the conspiracies about the Rothschild family having like $500 trillion. If I was part of that family, I would go on the internet ever.
Yeah. You wouldn't
I'd
say
just live
word.
On a yacht.
You commission plays about the internet and have people like professional actors perform theater of the internet for you on my mega yacht.
Awesome. Hey, Mike, we really appreciate you coming on.
Absolutely.
Already in the comments, people are like, a whole bunch of people are pre-ordering your book. They're looking forward to it. So,
all right. That's awesome. Thank you guys. This was terrific.
Glad we could have you. Hopefully, maybe again sometime.
Yeah, absolutely.
100%.
Next time we're down in Pasadena around that area, if they do Alien Con there again, we'll have to
join the party.
We'll get hammered and go to Lucky Boy.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. Love it. You got us.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Mike. We'll talk to you soon.
Playing my heartstrings.
Easy, Mike.
Yep, you too.